Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, December 10th, 2014. And with me today, I have how about if I say you guys are awesome friends? Because you are. John Martellaro, how are you, John?
Good morning. I'm good. Nice to be here.
And it's always great to have you here. And Dave Hamilton, how are you, Dave?
I am great to be here. Happy to be here. What the heck is going on? All the words are coming out jumbled. I'm glad I'm your friend.
Yeah, hugs for everyone.
There you go.
Yeah. So we have a sponsor this week, which we'll be talking about shortly, and that's Casper, the mattress company. But first, let's hop back to what I just said, hugs for everyone. I gave myself a wonderful segue and didn't even realize it.
Yeah, I was glad you picked up on that.
Yeah, sometimes I actually pick up what I'm putting down. So I guess what that means is occasionally even I listen to what I'm saying. So the first topic that I wanted to look at today is this thing with this app that I came across yesterday, and my initial reaction was shock and surprise. But it's actually evolved from there, and the app is called Cuddle Bids, as in cuddle, like in cuddling or snuggling with someone. So Cuddle Bids, and it's an application that it's like a social networking service where you find other people that want to hug, snuggle, cuddle, and you connect with them that way. And then I found a second app that had also recently come out called Cuddler, and it does the same thing. And although this app, it lets you use location-based services to find people that are close by that are looking for some casual cuddling. And my reaction, I thought, was interesting. As I've been telling other people about these apps, the reactions I'm getting from them, I think, are very interesting. And I'm just really curious where this whole thing is going and what you guys think about these social-based apps that connect people just to cuddle and snuggle.
I had not heard of this cuddling thing until I guess it was last spring, perhaps, when my daughter came home and said that she was trying to mess with her world cultures teacher, social studies teacher, and needed to do current events articles and wanted to do one about cuddle houses. And so, therefore, we had a dinner table conversation about Japanese cuddle houses. I had not heard of this before then. Whatever people want to do with one another is fine. Apps that want to connect people are fine, but there's a concern, right, about personal safety that comes in when you have an app that is connecting people for very personal reasons, right? And I always worry about where is that line drawn, especially if it's location-based. I mean, now we're not only narrowing down what your interests are, but also that you are nearby. And how does that work? There's all kinds of... There's a social and physical responsibility that these app developers inherit, I think, when they create something like this. They don't technically inherit that. I don't know if they could be sued if one person were to stalk another because of their app or using their app. But to me, it's certainly a social responsibility they inherit, sure, if not a legal one. Yeah.
Sure. But as I'm looking at these apps, I'm not sure if there's that much of a true distinction between a social networking app for cuddling and a social networking app for dating. And the big difference that I'm seeing is that with apps where you're finding people to date, the pretense is that you are going to meet someone and then decide what to do. Whereas with a cuddle social networking app, the pretense is you're meeting someone to have a non-sexual physical connection.
It's a good
point.
Good point.
You know that, and I'm glad you made that distinction, Jeff, because as I understand it, and I really am watching this from afar, a dating app the sky is the limit, right? The potential is you might wind up having a family with this person someday, right? You know, that's a possibility.
Sure.
But it also may not be, right? You know, with a cuddle app, with the whole cuddling thing, as I understand it, there is little expectation of any sort of relationship other than this cuddling thing. I mean, it's almost all like the cuddle houses that I've read about. A lot of them seem like, you know, almost like massage therapy. I mean, it's a very intimate thing, but it's not intended to be anything more than, I don't want to say a professional relationship, because now it sounds like prostitution, but you know, but a professional relationship, right? You know,
sure.
Or a very strictly defined thing. Now, maybe I completely misunderstand the concept of where cuddling has evolved, but that's how I understood it to be a very specific thing.
I think that that you're spot on with that, and at the risk of sharing too much information, I've actually been to cuddle parties. And
okay, sure. Yeah.
So I'd been invited, and I thought, okay, this is a really interesting experience that I would not otherwise have opportunity to participate in.
Yeah.
And it was explained to me that the events are very structured with very, very strict guidelines. They are non-sexual, and any physical contact has to be mutually approved.
Sure.
So you can't just walk up to someone and hug them unless they are willing to be hugged.
Safer in a group setting, I would think.
Yeah, so it was a group setting.
Yeah.
Everyone that was there knew at least some of the people that were there, so there was familiarity.
Right.
And I had a couple friends that were there, so I felt comfortable at least snuggling with the people that I knew. And it was very structured.
Yeah.
So
I guess the concern is if, you know, now it's not you're being invited to with an app like I'm understanding the ones you're talking about. It's not that you're being invited by someone you know and now have at least a by proxy connection to anyone you might meet. We're talking about the only you know, your location, your proximity replaces a by proxy connection, right? And now it's strangers meeting, and not even at, you know, what I would call a cuddle house, where it's a business, right? I mean, there are businesses where you can go and cuddle someone for 45 minutes, and that's, you know, it, like I said, it's like therapy. It's like massage therapy. Now it's, you know, where are you going to meet? This is all impromptu, potentially, with an app like this. And that's where that social responsibility comes in. It's like, okay, what kind of – maybe, I don't know, maybe I download the app and I say I want to cuddle. I'm not knowing anything. I don't know that this is not supposed to be more than just cuddling, right? And maybe I come in with the wrong expectation, and now that creates a problem. I'm a responsible person. I'm not interested in harming anyone, but if someone were interested in stalking or harming someone, now again, this creates a very potentially dangerous scenario.
And yes, and that's where I'm wondering what the ramifications are of apps like this. But then, are we having serious problems like this with dating services?
I think the answer is yes.
Okay, so if we are having those issues with dating services, my assumption is we will have those issues with services that connect people for one-on-one cuddling, not specifically because it's cuddling, but because it falls under that same umbrella as the dating services and dating apps.
Yeah. Jeff, can you clarify these two apps that you mentioned at the top of the program? Do they invite a one-on-one meeting, or do they invite a chaperoned, supervised group meeting?
So both apps they make it very easy to do a one-on-one meeting. And that's basically how they work. However, they both offer guidelines where they say the things that you would expect, which is good advice. Never meet with someone if you're not comfortable with them. Don't meet in places that you're not comfortable going to. If you'd rather meet someone and hug in public, then public is a good thing. If you feel like you need chaperones, then do that. So they're not specifically geared to create more than two person environment for the interactions, but they do offer people guidelines where they say, look, if this is something that you feel you need someone else there, then have someone else there.
What I think is interesting is how historically we have developed through the legal system and social mores certain friction points where people have sort of built in defensive shields, so to speak, and attitudes. And then the technology comes along on the internet and app development that breaks down or undermines those, whether it's security or privacy or personal safety or taxi cab fares or whatever it is. The social attitudes are consistently and routinely not undermined, but altered and affected by the development of these apps. And what I find interesting is the social reaction to the apps can sometimes be warm and unexpected, and new things happen. And sometimes it can be this is just too creepy for words, and then the initiative dies on the vine. That's interesting to watch.
And it'll be interesting to see what happens with these apps. And you did bring up a good point, which I think is a great place to wrap up this topic. The whole social and cultural thing that goes along with this. We live in a culture that has spent a very, very long time building intimacy walls and teaching people, for right or wrong, that intimacy is not something that's done publicly, and in many cases is just a bad or dirty thing. So how much of the reaction that we all have initially had to apps like this is based on that social part, and how much of it is intellectual?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So yeah, I think these apps have a tough climb ahead of them. I am really curious to see how they play out. And we have a sponsor today, so I guess we should hop into that because, well, I'm actually pretty excited about them. And our sponsor is Casper Mattresses, and I am a Casper Mattress user, and I'm very happy with mine. And what sets Casper apart from other mattress companies is that they make these really high-end foam mattresses that don't cost as much as the competitors because they have low overhead because they don't have storefronts. And so you pick out the mattress that you want, they ship it to you, and you pop open the box, it expands out, and you have this really comfortable, really nice mattress. I have a queen-size mattress. It costs $850. It would be well over $1,000, I'm sure, if I picked a comparable mattress up in a store. And one of the things that they do, because you have to mail order it, they give you a tryout period. So you have, I believe it's 100 days to return your mattress. And the first couple weeks of that window, they don't want you to send it back because you need to have a test period to adapt to the mattress and then decide if you like it. So it's not like you're buying it and then you're just committed to a mattress that you may or may not like. Although in my case, I really do like it. So it's nice to know that they believe in the products enough that they are willing to give you this extended return period, and I'm betting they don't get that many mattresses returned.
No, and I've got a Casper mattress now too, and they are memory foam mattresses. And you really, it's not that the mattress needs to break in. In fact, quite the opposite. They don't break in. They remain the same throughout, which is awesome. It's that you need to become adjusted to sleeping on memory foam. And it does take usually a couple of weeks is probably a stretch. It's usually a couple of days. And then for me, I found it wonderful. But there, that first night, it's different. And so you do. You need a little bit of a period to adjust before you decide whether you like it or not, which is why trying it for 5 minutes in the store is not enough.
No, it's definitely not. And so I am very, very pleased with mine. and my sleep patterns have improved, which for me is a fantastic thing because it's no secret that I have had really bad sleep issues over the years. So this was a great find for me. They want to make sure that you like your mattress. So in addition to having that really nice return window that I don't think you'll need to use, they're also offering all of our listeners a $50 discount on whichever mattress size they want to get. So if you go to casper.com/TDO, you can take advantage of that discount and just use the discount code TDO, which stands for TMO Daily Observations, very clever of them, and pick out your mattress and start sleeping better. It's just wonderful. So thank you to Casper for being our sponsor this week. And here we are. We're already at 15 minutes. I really wanted to hit another topic today, but we're kind of out of time. So I guess we're just going to have to wrap up. And
can we hit John? We can't run through John's quickly here.
You know what?
Are we capable of that?
You know what? This is my show. It can run as long as I want. Sure. Let's go ahead and do that. And John, so you were offering up some interesting insight on the whole thing that's been happening with the Apple forcing developers to pull features out of their iOS apps. So let's go ahead and dive into that.
For the readers who haven't noticed, there's been sort of a firestorm amongst some developers lately. Seems to be a renewed emphasis by Apple on certain features, especially since iOS 8 came out. And some developers have been asked to remove certain kinds of functionality. And it's gone as far as, you know, Panic's FTP client being asked to remove the send function, which is an integral part of an FTP client. And there's a reason for it. And there's a rather energetic discussion going on right now amongst developers about the balance between developer innovation, the customer's ability to combine features to get things done, and Apple's need for making sure that the apps are first class and without peril to the customer and are secure. So that discussion is gotten into high gear this week, and it's on everybody's radar right now.
Now, so part of the problem I'm seeing out of this is that these developers are releasing these apps, and they have really great showcase features that highlight just how powerful and useful iOS can be. And then after the apps are available for a certain amount of time, then Apple is suddenly saying, oh, by the way, the really great feature that shows off exactly how powerful our operating system can be, you need to pull that out.
Yeah, it calls into question the time. I've read articles that say that the Apple engineer doesn't have very long to analyze this app, and so sometimes the horse gets out of the barn. Things need to be tidied up, and that gravely upsets the developer, of course.
Oh, sure. And in the case of Panic's Transmit for iOS, part of the problem is the way Apple gives access to those underlying features for developers. Am I right? Like, because in this case, to pull the one thing that they were told to pull, which is the ability to upload content to iCloud Drive, meant that they had to pull the feature just across the board, so you can't upload to any service.
But the problem is the API doesn't distinguish. And so if you were using, say, the Transmit client to upload things to the cloud, Apple says, no, the app has to follow its own protocols for uploading to the cloud, and the customer can't just dream up his own use for the app to upload anything he wants to. And there might be some security implications with that. The problem is that the internet and apps are very complex. You don't always understand the implications of the app while you're analyzing it. It may look good. It gets released, and then in the process, it's discovered that something perilous could happen. or that violates the guidelines after it's been approved. And it's getting a little bit sticky, and some developers are getting greatly annoyed because, you know, if you get bounced out of the app store, it's really bad for your business.
I just thought of something here. So I may be someone, I like to save PDFs a lot, right? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times what I'll do, and I save PDFs of every user manual the user manual for every product I get. And I do it the day I get the product, because that way 5 years from now, when that product's been discontinued or the user manual is no longer available, I still have a pristine copy of the manual somewhere. So I visit the website and I save the PDF and I put it in my Dropbox. Now, I could just as easily put it in my iCloud drive, but I don't put it in my Dropbox anymore. I save it somewhere else, but it doesn't matter. I save it. Now, I do that from visiting a website and then saving the PDF. By this guideline of Apple's, I cannot, on iOS, I cannot take that PDF and save it to my iCloud drive because the app that I'm using, i.e. Safari or any third-party web browser, did not create that file, right? But what happens if I were to download something and then save it to move it to another app, and then from that app upload it to iCloud Drive? How does Apple know where that line is crossed?
That's a good question.
Right, because I mean, there's a hack available here, right? Transmit creates a second app called Save to iCloud Drive, and you pump data into that app and allow, you know, and then now it goes to iCloud Drive. Does that how does this work, right? You know, where are we drawing this line? What is created in the app mean when nothing gets downloaded automatically by Transmit and Panic's FTP client, right? I mean, I intentionally download this file to the app, and then I intentionally upload that file to iCloud Drive. I mean, there's nothing that happens automatically, and that's why Apple has that sheet that no one can touch, right? That share sheet is only controllable by the user interacting with the app at that moment in time, and that is a security limit. So why impose some weird restriction there? I don't get it.
I don't get it either. To me, it would be akin to Apple saying, okay, so you have this hard drive in your Mac, but you can't put files in your documents folder except from an app that specifically makes a document.
Right. That's exactly right. It's weird.
Yeah, it's
I mean, I get that you want to have limits of things that can happen without a user's intention, right? And explicit intention. And iOS is really good at that. Even in this case, iOS is really good at that. So why artificially limit what a user would intentionally be doing?
You've got me. I can't figure that one out. But my concern now is that since we're starting to see this track record with Apple, are developers going to decide that they're just simply not going to support new features in the operating system as they're rolled out because they don't know if they're going to have to pull that feature out of their app later on?
Yeah, it's not clear, right? I mean, I think what Panic did was a great thing and really smart use of the new stuff that Apple added to iOS 8. And now they can't use it.
And now they can't use it. And I didn't realize that that feature is being pulled from the update when I allowed Transmit to update.
Yeah.
So I can't actually save files with Transmit anymore.
What I think is interesting is the disconnect between the feature set of the developer and Apple's restrictions. There's a lot of latitude on the part of the developer to create features given Xcode and the APIs. And they go ahead and they use their imagination to create these features, and then they find out later it violates Apple guidelines. It would be nice if Apple's security guidelines and thoughts were better implemented into the API sets. I'm just fantasizing.
Yeah, right. No, that's near impossible to do, right?
I don't know, but it's a fantasy.
Yeah, I'm with you on it. Yeah.
But I can understand the frustration developers are having because they feel like they don't have good clear communication with Apple, so they don't know what the expectations are.
And there's nothing worse than being a developer and doing something brilliant and doing a wonderful job of programming and coming up with something really innovative that you think the customers are going to love and then being told you can't use it. That's the downer.
Happens all the time.
Yep, and here we are talking about it because it is so much.
It is a thing that drives people to Android. I mean, you know, some, not the smart ones.
Sure. Yeah, the smart ones, they find other ways to work around the issues or figure out how to get a dialogue with Apple so that they can get Apple to change their view and allow something to come back that was just pulled.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. I think we really are out of time now.
You're right.
Yeah. So, Dave, thanks for prodding me into throwing the extra topic in, even though we ran over, because I thought that was a really great discussion.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And John, thank you so much for joining in with all of your great perspectives.
You bet.
And head on over to casper.com/TDO and find the mattress you need and get a $50 discount on it. And we will see everyone again tomorrow.
Bye-bye.